Good morning. This is a joint project between the USDA ARS and Mississippi State and Texas A&M, USDA ARS at Texas A&M, and with the funding of Qatar Incorporated. Reniform nematode is a serious problem in the southeast of the United States. It was first reported in the 1940s, and since the 1940s has become a major problem in Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Arkansas, and account for 6% of the losses. The identification of these reniform-resistant genes are very important, and their incorporation into breeding lines is a priority, so because we don't have resistant varieties to reniform right now in the market. So recently, one of the nematicides used extensively in cotton temic has been face-off, so we need to have alternatives to control the nematodes. So, and also, the information regarding markers is still limited. So this is the reniform nematode. You can see that the name comes from the kidney shape that the female has. It lays eggs in a gelid matrix, and the J2 go into the roots and go straight in this way. And this is the kind of damage that they create in the root. Create stunting of the plant, yellowness, and this is a diagram. The males don't do anything. The females are the ones that damage the plant. So what are the sources of reniform resistance? So we have in the first, we have three different gene pools in cotton. So longicalyx is from the tertiary gene pool. It has been reported as immune on the secondary gene pool and the primary gene pool. We have these species that have been tested since the 80s in Louisiana and Texas and Mississippi, and we found several, like, the, as I said, longicalyx immune, belong to the F genome, come from Africa, and Somalensis, Herbaceum, Iden on the secondary gene pool, and the tertiary gene pool, the Barbadensis and the Hirsutum. There are several that have been report resistance. So what are the genetics of the resistance to nematodes? First, you know, Dr. Jack Jones and his student in the 90s reported that two or more genes were, they did a generation means analysis, and they found out that it was a qualitative inheritance, and the two or more genes were involved in the resistance to reniform, or tolerance to reniform nematode. That's what they call it. In the arboreum, we have several reports, single gene additive effects by Avila, partial dominance from one of our graduate students, Michael LaFosse. And recently, the longicalyx from Dr. Robinson, single dominant gene, and the arboreal iodine from Eric Sachs, he's here in the audience, two dominant genes. Okay, what are the molecular markers associated with the reniform resistance? So, in the longicalyx integration, we see that Dr. Robinson and Nilish, these from Texas A&M, they found that BNL3279, 1066, and BNL836, were associated with reniform resistance. In this case, they released two lines that are known as long rank 1 and long rank 2 that provide the source of resistance that is available right now to cotton breeders. It is located on chromosome 11. In the case of the arboreal, Avila from Dr. Max Stewart in Arkansas lab, he used A219 that is a resistance source from the arboreal. And he said that there was AFLP24 was associated because it was a dominant marker. It was not very efficient for that. And finally, in the tri-species hybrid that was done by Sachs and Romano did the molecular work, she reported that the 3279 again and 2662 were associated with reniform resistance, but they were located on chromosome 21. 11 and 21 are homologs, okay? So what were the objectives of this research? Number one was to determine the inheritance of this. We use a generation means analysis to do that. Second one, identify the SSR markers, you know, link it to QTL because we want to mark those genes and we want to do molecular marker assisted selection. We're going to do introgression. So what do we use in this experiment? We use, as I said, generation means analysis. You know the drill, you know, 30 plants from the persistent pattern. The susceptible pattern is the resistant pattern that Mauricio was talking about, Akela Nemex. In this case, it's susceptible to reniform. It's resistant to RKM, but susceptible to reniform. I want to make that clear. And the F1s, you know, double us your parents, three times, 10 times the amount of on the F2, and half of the F2 number of plants on the either back cross to the susceptible or to the recessive. And we use a randomized complete block. We did it in a growth chamber, and we did three replications, 240 plants per replication in the growth chamber. As you can see, this is the kind of layout that Dr. Forrest Robinson did use in Texas A&M. He did the phenotyping, and we in Mississippi State did the molecular marker work. Okay, this is the protocol that Dr. Robinson used. He planted the seed in the small pots, inoculated it after 2 weeks, 4,000 reniform juveniles J2, harvest at 9 weeks, collect the sample, go extract the nematodes by Berman funnel method, count it, and he says some of the plants that he later used for back crossing to develop some of the lines resistant to this thing. We use, of course, Wayless squares using SARS for generation means analysis following the Heyman and Gamble approach. In the molecular marker, in the approach, in the QPL mapping, we use 300 F2 plants, 14,000 SSR markers, and we use a bulk segregate analysis. 10 most resistant, 10 most susceptible, parent 1, parent 2, and the F1. We use a robot platform to do all these PCR and this marker because a lot of data points, so you do the math. And we use a AVI gene mapper to do the fragment analysis and join map and QTL cartographer for the QTL work. In addition to that, we use several old formulas that you can say that the ones that were used to calculate the numbers of genes involved, the Castle-White formula, N1, later that land modified, N2 and N2, 3 and 4, and finally the Cochrane modification that's called an M. It's an old, you know, formulas we use in plant breeding. So what are the results? What have we found with this research? We found that first, at least one or more genes were involved in the inheritance to this reniform resistance. We use the log transformation, you know, nematodes, they do not distribute it normally, so we have to transform. But you can see that the numbers, you know, is at least one or more than one gene. Second, when we look at the means for the generation means analysis, you can see this is the resistant parent, the susceptible parent. The F1 is somewhere between the two. The F2 is almost similar to the F1. Back cross to the resistant parent, closer to the parent 1, and the back cross to the susceptible parent, similar to the susceptible parent. So we found additive gene action, and we can say that maybe partial dominance may be involved here. Here is a distribution, you know, the frequency of the plants, the total plants that we use in this study. And you can see, you know, parent 1, you can see toward these sides are more resistant. Even with the resistant parent, you found some plants that look like maybe have some susceptibility. When you look at this, it's a susceptible parent all the way to the right. The F1, you know, you can say somewhere in the middle. The back, the F2s, we got a bunch of plants to the resistant parents. Back cross to the resistant pattern, similar to the F1, and back cross to the susceptible pattern. So this is the nature of nematode work. Some of you guys have done nematode work. This is the variability that you found. So we run these 14 social markers, and we, in the bulk segregate analysis, we found 137 markers that are supposed to be associated, and we map it on the linkage map. We've got 17 linkage groups. And out of that, I run a one-way analysis of variants, and we found that only two chromosomes were involved, chromosome 21 and chromosome 18. As you can see here, the bolded marker 1551, GH132, this is the region that we found the more association, and this is the other region we found more association. When we go to the, we say, okay, let's go and do some composite interval mapping. We went into the composite interval mapping, and we found out that we found three major QTLs, two on chromosome 21 and one in chromosome 18. As you can see here, these are the flanking markers, 1551, 132. This is the location of the QTL at 168. It's closer to GH132. Here is the other the other QTL, VNL 411 and 3279. We call it 21-arm bar, following the methodology that Dr. Robinson used for the longitudinals, and this one in 18. As you can see, we have additive and dominance effects significant. This is the percentage of the data explained by the R-squared. Well, this is just percentage of a K-line MET. It's the percentage of the reproduction of the check. That's the methodology that Dr. Robinson used. When we go to this is the raw nematode data without conversion. You can see the location of the QTL is almost similar, additivity and dominance effect, and similar R-squared. But when we go to the log transformation, when we normalize the data, you can see that the QTL moves toward the GH132, closer to the, look at the 3279 is 184.5, is closer to 3279, and in this case, it's close to the 569. This is a smaller minor QTL. So we got 15%, 17%, and 6% on the R-square. Here's the QTL maps. You can see clear there are two QTLs here. This is a percentage of K-line MX, raw nematode data, and converted data. So you can see they almost they line up top of each other. You know, you can almost a similar thing. This is chromosome 21 and chromosome 18. This is the significance 2.5, the LOD. And when we go here, we can conclude that only ID effect were significant, persistent, we could say maybe characterized as partial dominance, one or more genes may be involved in the inheritance of resistance. Three QTLs we found were identified. They are responsible, since you see the negative values, they were significant for reduction in the numbers of reniform nematodes. Negative effects, as I said, indicate that reduction. They coming from GB713. The LOD 13.8 and the R squares 0.9 to 17% for all these markers on chromosome 21. In the case of chromosome 18, LOD is smaller than 4, but still some percentage account, especially with the 569. So we have we've seen reports that 3279 has been associated with reniform resistance in other two previous projects. So maybe there's some common ancestral source in the running from resistance from each of those species. GB713 is an excellent source of resistance, and these markers can be used in a molecular marker system selection. They will be helpful for breeders to select. At the present time, we have an integration of the GB713 source in a commercial variety, and also we're doing fine mapping in those two areas. I'd be happy to thank Cotton Incorporated for the funding on the project, and for Mr. Doug Dollar, who recently retired, for running the machines in the lab. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer. Roy. Not really, not much segregation distortion in a few markers, and I dumped those markers. There were some, but not really much. There was one that Jody reported with Gabriela 2662. Somehow, I think it was not just segregation distortion. I don't think that there were no homozygous for the allele, so the segregation was not very very good. I couldn't make it. We've been selfing when we start the new project and the integration. Forrest, before he retired, he went in the greenhouse and screened the most resistant and selfed. So we got seed from the one that he told us was the most resistant ones. So Forrest did that work in Texas in College Station. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We did this marker is we compare to all the other hirsutans, and this band is no present on susceptible hirsutans. And in the Barbadensis, they might be common in other Barbadensis that are resistant, like Texas 110, have the same allele. So it's useful in that regard.